Good afternoon, everyone. The Conference Committee on Housing Finance Omnibus will come to order. Welcome to members and staff and members of the public who are here today and helped us get to this point. Writing this bill was a very different experience than the 2023 bill, but I am proud of the bill in front of us and look forward to a robust discussion during the Conference Committee process. We have a light agenda today. Nonpartisan staff will do a walkthrough of the spreadsheet and side-by-sides, and then we'll take public testimony. To kick off member staff and introductions, I will turn it over to my co-chairs for brief comments and to introduce themselves. I guess I should say I am Chair Lindsay Port. I chair the Senate Housing Finance Committee. And I represent Burnsville and Savage in District 55. Chair Igo.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Spencer Igo from the Iron Range. I'll just kind of echo, we have some good bills in front of us that are going to be working on. Looking forward to a collaborative discussion. And we should be able to land on something good. Now we can just hope for targets. We had white smoke for a Pope. Can we get white smoke for a budget target, please? Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Igo. Mike Howard, co-chair of the Housing Committee in the House, and would just echo that I think that this is going to be a conference committee that is ready to get to work and pulling in the same direction, and I look forward to our work and ultimately a really strong housing bill that we're able to pass.
Representative Nash.
Representative Jim Nash, chair of State Government Finance, longtime housing advocate, and I would love to see white smoke, and you know, maybe we can actually change some of the direction of the housing market in our state.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Port. Representative Leish Kozlowski, I represent Duluth, District 8B, beautiful on Lake Superior, and grateful to be here. Wonderful to serve on another conference committee with Chair Port, though I'll say I'm glad that we're not doing cannabis with about 400 pages and look forward to a good bill, good investments, and making sure that Minnesotans are housed.
Representative Kozlowski, that bill was only 165 pages. Felt like 400, though. Senator Bolden is just getting seated, but if you want to introduce yourself.
Happy to. Apologies for my tardiness. Senator Bolden, I represent District 25, which is Rochester and areas north, and I am the vice chair of the Senate Housing and Homelessness Prevention Committee. Very happy to be here.
Thank you. And then if we can just have staff quickly introduce yourself, starting with Mr. Olson.
Eric Olson, nonpartisan fiscal staff for the Senate Housing Committee.
Laura Pacher, legislative analyst for the Senate Housing Committee.
CJ Larson, committee legislative assistant for the Senate Housing Committee.
Courtney Schaff, committee administrator for the Senate.
Garrick Spenwin, I'm the committee administrator for the GOP caucus in the House of Representatives.
Benji Brinks, committee administrator for the House DFL caucus.
Justin Cope, House Research.
Katrina Highmark, House Fiscal.
Thank you. We will turn to the walkthrough. And Mr. Olson, I think you're going to start with the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Eric Olson, Senate Fiscal for the Housing Committee. In your packets, you should have a four-page spreadsheet, roughly, top left corner, housing omnibus, parentheses, SF2298-conference committee, top right corner, timestamp of 4:36 p.m. Just to orient you to the spreadsheet, column A includes the different appropriation items. Column B is where the funds come from. Column C includes the 24 to 25, the current biennium appropriation amounts, according to the February 2025 forecasts for that biennium. What I'll focus on is columns D through K, D through L, which is the Senate position. My counterpart, Ms. Highmark, will focus on columns M through U, which is the House position. Pages 1 and 2 of the spreadsheet basically walk through the bill in detailed format, but Ms. Highmark and I will walk through page 3, which is just the change items from base for each of the respective positions. So just to orient you, the Senate position, the Senate budget, general fund budget targets for fiscal years 25 through 27 was a net additional spend of $3 million from the general fund, And then for the tails 28 through 29 was additional spending of $1 million from the general fund, and the Senate position does meet those budget targets. So to walk through the change items for the Senate position, starting on line 74 of the spreadsheet, for Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grants, there's an additional $2 million in the 26-27 biennium and an additional $1 million from the general fund in the 28-29 biennium. Moving on down to line 77 for FHPAP, there's additional spending in additional one-time bump in FY 2026 of $10.15 million from the general fund. Moving on down to line 80 for the community-based first-generation homebuyer down payment assistance program functions through MMCDC, there's additional spending of $2 million from the general fund in FY 26. And then it's added to the base beginning at FY 28 for a total of $900,000 of additional spending in the 28-29 biennium. On line 83, you see a savings in FY 25 of $10 million to the general fund from a cancellation of the communities, the single family housing for naturally occurring affordable housing, or NOAA, within the community stabilization program. So that's a savings of one-time savings of $10 million to the general fund. So just for the total amounts for the Housing Finance Agency for the Senate position, that's on line 91. You see the savings of $10 million in FY 25, and then additional spending of $14.15 million to the general fund in 26-27, and $1.9 million in 28-29. On line 94, there's a one-time spending of $200,000 from the general fund to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for a task force on homeowners and commercial property insurance of $200,000. The House carries this funding provision in their commerce omnibus bill, so there's a slight difference there. Moving on down to line 98 for a repeal, there's a repeal of the transfer to the housing support account. This was a governor's recommendation as well. So there's, by repealing this transfer and the corresponding account, there's savings of $450,000 in FY 25, and that's ongoing. After that, so you get savings to the general fund of $900,000 in 26-27 and another $900,000 to the general fund in 28-29. So on line 104 for the total change items combining FY 2025, when you combine the savings of $10.45 million with additional spending of $13.45 million, you see the net additional spend to the general fund of $3 million in 26-20 for fiscal years 25 through 27 and $1 million in 28-29, which meets our budget targets. One other thing I just want to point on line 108, the Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Omnibus Bill, or House File 2432, First Unofficial Engrossment, includes a contingent proportional reduction to the housing omnibus budget bill's appropriations to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency of $66.5 million. And then a corresponding contingent appropriation of $66.5 million to reimburse landlords during an eviction moratorium for tenants with Section 8 rental vouchers. And then there are two other provisions within Article 1 that I just want to point out on the side-by-sides. On R1 of the side-by-side, the Senate position includes, notwithstands Minnesota Statute 16B.98, Subdivision 14, and says the commissioner of the Housing Finance Agency can't use any of the total appropriation for administrative costs. And then on line, on page R8, the Senate includes the governor's language for transfer of funds for housing production. This is within Subdivision 20. And with that, that concludes my walkthrough, and I'll hand it over to Ms. Highmark to walk through the House position.
Ms. Highmark.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, Katrina Highmark, House Fiscal Analysis. I'm going to start with the House position on line 70 within the development and redevelopment programs within the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. The Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program, also known as Challenge, receives a $10 million appropriation in fiscal 26. The Workforce Housing Development Program also receives a $10 million appropriation in fiscal 26. The Manufactured Home Park Infrastructure Grants Program receives a $2 million one-time appropriation in fiscal 26. The Workforce Homeownership Program receives a $3 million appropriation in fiscal 26, and the Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grants Program receives a $20 million in fiscal 26. All of these appropriations are one time. Moving on to line 77 is the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program, FHPAP. Fiscal 26, this program receives a $30.15 million appropriation. Starting in fiscal 27, there is an ongoing appropriation to the FHPAP program of $450,000. This results in a $30.6 million appropriation in fiscal 26 and 27, and a $900,000 appropriation in fiscal 28 and 29. Jumping down to line 86, there's a $500,000 one-time appropriation for the statewide tenant education and hotline service. Line 86 has a task force to be managed by the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency on accessible housing. This receives a $150,000 appropriation in fiscal 26, which is one time. Line 88 also has a $100,000 one-time appropriation in fiscal 26 for policies to stabilize affordable housing. This results in total change items for the Housing Finance Agency on line 91 of $76.35 million in fiscal 26 and 27 and $900,000 in fiscal 28 and 29. Similar to the Senate provision, there is the repeal of the transfer to the housing support account that was also, as my colleague Mr. Olofsson mentioned, in the governor's recommendations. Line 99, starting in fiscal 28, is a payment for the debt service obligations for $100 million of housing infrastructure bonds. This would increase to $5.6 million in fiscal 29, for a total fiscal impact of $7.6 million in fiscal 28 and 29. Moving on to line 102, the total change items in the fiscal 26 and 27 biennium for the House position is $75.45 million and $7.6 million in fiscal 28 and 29. Combining that fiscal 26 and 27 total with the cancellation from fiscal 25, the House does reach its $75 million target in fiscal 26 and 27, and its $7.6 million target in fiscal 28 and 29. And with that, Madam Chair, that completes my overview of the spreadsheet.
Thank you. Ms. Painter, you want to start us through the side-by-sides?
Madam Chair and members, I'll take us through the policy articles, starting on page R10 of the side-by-side. Pages R10 to R12, there's a Senate-only provision. It's section 1. Requires the Housing Finance Agency to include tax credit and notice requirement information in its annual letter to manufactured home park owners. On page R12, there are provisions that are the same. It's section 2 in the Senate and section 1 in the House. It adds counties and cities that allocate low-income housing tax credits to the section relating to wage theft prevention and use of responsible contractors, and it makes a technical correction. Page R2, there's two sections that are the same, section 3 in the Senate and section 1 in the House, adds a requirement for the Housing Finance Agency to submit an annual report on the financial stability of the affordable housing industry. On page R3, there are similar provisions, section 4 in the Senate and section 2 in the House, requires the Housing Finance Agency to convene an annual meeting to discuss affordable housing issues with cities and counties with high levels of cost-burdened households. On page R13, there's a House-only provision, section 2, requires the Housing Finance Agency to publish information on the rights and responsibilities of landlords and residential tenants, and to provide a link or a copy of the Attorney General's landlord-tenant publication. On pages R13 and R14, there's a House-only provision, section 3. It replaces the annual eligibility recertification for the State Rental Assistance Program with an annual income recertification for the purpose of determining the amount of rental assistance. On page R14, there are similar provisions, section 5 in the Senate and section 4 in the House, allows the Housing Finance Agency to use a formula to determine award amounts for the rent assistance program and to redistribute unused funds among program administrators. On pages R14 and R15 is a Senate-only provision, Section 6. It adds a limitation on rent increases for rental housing built with low-income housing tax credits, so that rent cannot rise faster than the rate of inflation or the rate of increase in the area median income. On page R15, there's a Senate-only provision, Section 7, expands eligibility for the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program by adding contract alternative and tribal contract schools. On page R15, there are provisions that are different. Section 8 is the Senate, and Section 5 is the House. They both modify qualifying entities for the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program. The Senate language allows contract alternative and tribal contract schools to qualify, and the House language allows nonprofit organizations contracted by a school to qualify. On pages R15 to R17, there's a House-only provision, Section 6. It allows the use of housing infrastructure bond proceeds on adaptive reuse for the development of both supportive housing and very low-income housing. On pages R17 to R19, there's a Senate-only provision, Section 9, clarifies that officers for the purpose of disqualifying a business do not include individuals serving as volunteer nonprofit board members. For the purposes of determining eligibility for the Minnesota Housing Tax Credit Contribution Grants and Loans, it also makes projects that received Workforce Housing Development Program grants eligible even if the project does not serve income-limited households. On pages R19 to R21, there are different provisions. Section 10 is a Senate provision. Section 5 is the House. The Senate codifies the community-based first-generation down payment assistance program that was established in laws of 2023. The House does not. Both the House and the Senate replace the household income limitation with an income limitation applying only to the qualifying person. Both bills increase the maximum assistance caps beginning in fiscal year 2027. The Senate also modifies reporting requirements for that program. On page R21 is a Senate-only provision. Section 11 allows a property owner to record the discharge of a restricted covenant related to a protected class at no cost. Pages R21 to R23 is another Senate-only provision, Section 12. And it states that counties may not charge for recording the discharge of a restricted covenant related to a protected class. On pages R23 to 24, there are some provisions that are the same. Section 13 in the Senate bill and Section 4 in the House bill. They both modify appropriation for community-based first-generation home buyers down payment assistance program, removing the requirement that funds recaptured be remitted to the Housing Finance Agency. On page R24, there are provisions that are the same. Section 14 is the Senate. Section 10 is the House. They modify local housing trust fund grants to require a grantee to use the funds within 5 years. In pages R24 to R25, there are provisions that are the same. Section 15 is the Senate provision. Section 11 is the House provision. They amend the high-rise sprinkler system grant program to allow loans and also amend the definition of eligible building to include those 7 stories or more and those serving households at or below 60% of the area median income. I believe Mr. Cope's going to go through the rest.
Madam Chair, members, Justin Cope, House Research. Running from R25 to R26 of the side-by-side, Section 16 on the Senate side and Section 6 on the House side have similar provisions that would require the Commissioner of MHFA to develop a policy framework for targeted stabilization of regulated affordable housing and to report on that framework to its Board of Directors and to the Legislature. Section 17 on R26 is a Senate-only provision that would allow the Commissioner of the MHFA to convene regular meetings of public funders and affordable housing stakeholders. R26 is a Section 7 is a House-only provision that would allow housing and redevelopment authorities to establish local housing trust funds. Running from R26 to R27, Section 8 is a house-only provision. Sections 8 and 9 are house-only provisions that would require that income generated from a local affordable housing aid or a statewide affordable housing aid project be used on an eligible expenditure of the respective housing aid. Running from R28 to R31 is a house-only article. And this article would allow housing and redevelopment authorities to establish public corporations for the purposes of participating in the Federal Rental Assistance Demonstration Program and also in MHFA's publicly owned housing program. Running from R31 to R33, there are two sections which are house-only provisions, and those two sections allow MHFA to issue $100 million in housing infrastructure bonds and then appropriate money to pay the debt service on those bonds. Turning to page R33, Section 3 on the House side is another House-only provision which would require MHFA to award points in its scoring system for its competitive development programs based on certain zoning and land use regulations of the local governments that would contain a proposed project. On R34, Section 7, running through R36 is a house-only provision that would establish a task force on accessible housing. And on R36, running through R39 of the side-by-side, is a Senate-only provision, which would establish a task force to evaluate issues and provide recommendations to the legislature about insurance affordability. And, Madam Chair, that concludes the walkthrough.
Thank you very much. Members, before we go to public testimony, do folks have any questions about the spreadsheet or the side-by-sides that we just walked through? All right, we'll go to public testimony then. First up, we have Commissioner Ho from the Housing Finance Agency. Welcome to the table, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
Chair Port, Chair Igo, Chair Howard, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Ho, and I'm the Commissioner of Minnesota Housing. It's really exciting to be here today after a session full of good and hard work. Anybody who's been paying attention knows that this committee on both the House and Senate side and now Conference Committee knows how very much you care about improving the housing situation of all Minnesotans and how well you've represented that this is truly a statewide challenge, one that impacts every district in the state. And so I really want to thank you for the conversations that we've had throughout the session and for the opportunity to be at this point in session ready to conference out these two terrific bills. I know that we are all waiting for the global targets, but I think that there's important things that we've done in words as well, and really looking forward to having an opportunity to work that out. I think it's an important moment to thank staff in advance, because I know that when we get into the final days of session, oftentimes we meet and talk and you scramble, and I include my staff in that as well, you scramble to get the words right on paper. I have confidence that if we get targets, we will produce a solid bill that we can all be proud of. So thank you so much for the work that you've done throughout the session to produce good bills that are going to allow us to have a great final product. And I'll keep it short because I know you have lots of others to hear from today.
Thank you, Commissioner. Does anyone have questions for the Commissioner before we let her go? All right.
My staff is here. I need to step away, but they'll be available if needed.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Assistant Commissioner Hassemer from the MMB. Welcome to the table, Assistant Commissioner. Please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Port and members of the Conference Committee. First, for the record, my name is Jennifer Hassemer. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management at Minnesota Management and Budget. So thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. I will briefly raise MMB's concerns about the Rental Assistance Demonstration Program provision in the House position, which begins on page R28 of the side-by-side. The purpose of this language would be to expand access to state general obligation bonding to a newly created class of public corporations who would like to access both general obligation bonds and additional federal subsidies through newer HUD programs. We are concerned that this proposal may not meet the constitutional ownership requirements for projects that receive state bonds. Given the uncertainty in implementing it, it risks slowing down the administration of this important funding source for critical public housing needs. We hope that the committee will carefully consider the risk of disruption against the potentially limited number of public housing authorities that this language may assist. We do appreciate the ongoing efforts and conversations we've had about the legal and constitutional issues with both the housing advocates and with Chair Howard. And we're pleased that we have successfully identified several pathways that will work under current law. Unfortunately, we remain stuck in terms of identifying a viable pathway in regards to one particular HUD program. The federal Section 18 program depends on transferring ownership of public housing assets to third-party entities. Some of the entities that HUD accepts may be closely affiliated with a public housing authority, but not all of them will be political subdivisions under the Minnesota Constitution. Chair Howard's proposal attempts to thread the needle in this regard by creating a new category of public corporations to try to fit these entities into the political subdivision box under the state constitution. And MMB has consistently cautioned that this proposal raises unresolved legal risks. The Minnesota Constitution clearly limits the use of state bonds to capital projects owned by the state or by political subdivisions of the state. That ownership requirement is not just a formality or a check-the-box exercise. It's a constitutional obligation that protects the public's investment. MMB's responsibility is to ensure that state bonds are used to meet all legal and constitutional requirements as the good stewards of the state finances. We urge the conference committee not to adopt this language. Thank you.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Next up, I have Libby Murphy, and after that, Paul Egger. Welcome to the table. Ms. Murphy, please introduce yourself and provide your testimony.
My name is Libby Murphy. I'm the Director of Policy at the Minnesota Housing Partnership. There's a lot of great things in this bill, so I want to get right to it. Thank you, members, for being in this position to be talking about new investments in housing. We know that all of you worked diligently throughout session to get us in this position, so thank you. I want to first highlight what MHP does support in the bill. $30 million in additional one-time funds to support the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program, or FHPAP. This will help 8,500 households in jeopardy of experiencing homelessness stay in their homes or quickly get them out of homelessness. This is a fiscally responsible investment. A failure to act puts enormous pressure on cities and counties to do the more expensive work of pulling households out of homelessness. We support $100 million in housing infrastructure bonds. While HIBs support an array of housing development, HIBs are the best resource to finance the creation and preservation of deeply affordable housing here in the state of Minnesota. And this investment leverages federal programs and private capital to produce more housing that the market cannot and will not do on its own. We support $10 million in additional one-time funds to the Economic and Development Housing Challenge Program, but for a couple $100,000 to a few $1 million, there are projects that will not come to fruition, and that means anywhere from 40 to 100 households will not be able to move into our communities. And so this is an important gap financing tool that is always oversubscribed. We support the $20 million in Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Program. We support the Senate language to make it easier for developers to pair the state housing tax credit with the Greater Minnesota Workforce Development Grant Program. It's a limited resource that is fully subscribed within 2 months this year. And so we support the Senate language as it's narrower in scope and limited to Greater Minnesota. We also support the developing a framework for stabilizing the regulated affordable housing sector. The most humane and cost-effective strategies are those that keep people in their homes, and it's imperative that we intervene as households will be displaced. We also support complementing state programs that provide direct subsidies for housing with smart policies. Competition for housing programs is great, and every program is oversubscribed. Therefore, state dollars should be maximized. MHP does not support modifying how to calculate rent adjustments through the low-income housing tax credit program in the Senate proposal. Lastly, I want to talk about two things that really didn't get done this session, but want to highlight their importance. So Minnesotans want to live in a thriving community where families and future generations of Minnesotans have an affordable place to live. Yet housing is more out of reach than ever before. Whether you're young, whether you're old, you live in a small town or a big city, affording a home is increasingly difficult for many people, even those in high-demand jobs. It's not an individual fault. It isn't that people aren't working hard. It's a systems problem that requires system solutions. Status quo isn't working, and it is within your power to rewrite rules and make sure everybody has a safe, stable, and a sustainable place to call home. First, the legislature can do more to unleash innovation in the marketplace by updating zoning rules. Second, the legislature can bring the choice to vote on dedicating revenue to housing to voters through a constitutional amendment for housing, the Our Future Starts at Home coalition constitutional amendment campaign. We know that Minnesotans are willing to dig each other out in a snowstorm. We know that Minnesotans care about one another, and we believe that Minnesotans should be given the opportunity to say yes to more housing in their communities through that initiative. So, and the stakes are high. Housing is connected to everything. We can transform housing in our communities, and at the same time, we transform outcomes in health and education and jobs. So I'll leave it at that, and thank you, and can stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Murphy. Mr. Egger, you are next, and after that, I have Kelly Law. Welcome to the table. Please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the conference committee, my name is Paul Egger. I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. Thank you for the opportunity to share our support for two specific items that are in the Senate bill. MNR appreciates the Senate's inclusion of $2 million in fiscal year 2026 and $450,000 in the base beginning in fiscal year 2028 for the community-based first-generation home buyer down payment assistance program. Our session agenda this year includes support for making this program permanent with ongoing funding to increase access to sustainable home ownership and reduce Minnesota's racial home ownership gap. We were proud members of the coalition that worked on the innovative pilot program, which was funded by the legislature in 2023. This program is effective at addressing a key barrier to home ownership for first-generation homebuyers, the lack of capital for a down payment, and has already assisted nearly 1,000 first-generation homebuyers since the funds became available last summer. This program is also an important tool in reducing Minnesota's racial home ownership gap. Home buyers are able to work with the mortgage lender of their choosing and are able to reserve funds so they know the assistance will be there when they find a home to purchase. We encourage you to prioritize funding for this program at some level so the great support the pilot program is providing for first-generation home buyers can continue. We also support the Senate's provision creating a task force on homeowners and commercial property insurance. And as was mentioned by staff at the beginning, this provision also passed the House and is being carried in the House Omnibus Commerce Budget Bill. Over the past couple of years, we've been hearing from more of our members about the challenge that rising insurance costs, and in the case of HOAs, availability of insurance is having on the housing market and those trying to get into home ownership. Alongside the limited supply of housing that is driving up costs and higher mortgage rates, the rising costs of insurance and property taxes are also contributing to the growing financial pressure on home ownership. Our research director actually put together some data earlier this year that showed in 2024 the monthly principal interest taxes insurance, or PITI payment, on a median-priced home in Minnesota was $2,551. Insurance costs are contributing to that upward pressure on homeowner budgets. So we encourage you to find a way to make this task force happen so that we can examine those costs moving forward. Thank you, Madam Chair and conferees.
Thank you very much, Mr. Egger. Ms. Law, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself, begin your testimony, and after Ms. Law, it will be Mr. Dahl.
Chairport, Representative Igo, Representative Howard, members of the committee, my name is Kelly Law, and I'm a senior policy and field building advisor with the Minnesota Consortium of Community Developers. We represent nonprofit affordable housing developers and operators working across Minnesota, providing both rental and homeownership opportunities. Our members support the development of housing across our entire state and house our local workforces, seniors, families, and people in addiction recovery in need of supportive services. I'm here today to express my support for the housing investments made in the House's budget. I want to start by saying thank you for including critically needed investments for housing infrastructure bonds and the Housing Challenge Program. HIBs and Challenge are our state's most important programs for building and preserving all types of affordable housing across the state. With the inclusion of $100 million dedicated to HIBs and a one-time increase of $10 million for Challenge, we can ensure that more Minnesotans are able to both maintain and find stable housing. Right now, housing operators are facing unprecedented challenges that are largely outside of their control. These include unparalleled increases in operating costs and rental arrears, significant challenges with public safety, and dramatic changes to property insurance costs and coverage. Without new resources for housing development and preservation, we risk losing decades of public investments into the affordable housing sector, which means families with low incomes will lose their homes and be forced into homelessness. We have also been advocating this session to establish a task force on homeowners and commercial property insurance, and we will be working closely with the Commerce Conference Committee to see that that gets done. We are also supportive of the investments made in FHPAP, the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Program, and the Greater Minnesota Development Programs. With your support of these programs and authorizing new housing infrastructure bonds this session, which I cannot overemphasize, we can address Minnesota's housing shortfall, signal to developers that funds are available for new affordable housing projects, and get more people into stable housing. Thank you all for your exemplary work on housing this session, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Law. Mr. Dahl, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself, present your testimony, and after that will be Jeru Gobazi.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael Dahl, and I'm the Public Policy Director at HomeLine. HomeLine is a statewide tenant advocacy organization that provides free and confidential legal services, hotline services available to any renter in the state. We also offer a variety of tenant and landlord education programs. I'd like to begin to ask that we all do our work to get leadership to lean more towards the House position of $75 million target for this committee. And also want to express our support for the additional resources that we can provide for family homeless prevention, especially as it pertains to keeping people housed and not getting evicted from their homes. I also want to thank the House for the House position of $500,000 in one-time funding for the statewide tenant education and hotline services. Specifically, thank you, Representative Kozlowski, for championing the hotline position. HomeLine believes that just like MHFA resources are allocated towards workforce housing, first-time home buyer education, homelessness prevention, and other areas, the state should also dedicate resources to educating legal services for Minnesota's renters. If the legislature allocates funding for this purpose, HomeLine intends to apply, given our history. For the past several years, it's been the busiest years in HomeLine's existence, where we've had over 20,000 people contact our hotline, serving tenants in all 87 counties across the state, with topics ranging from repairs, evictions, deposits, privacy, notices to vacate, lease renewals, and more. Given the demand, maintaining response times that clients expect is challenging, especially for those facing a housing crisis, when time is crucial. HomeLine does not advertise its services. We don't need to. In addition to referrals from other service providers, many local and county government programs send distressed renters our way to serve their clients. Yet no local or county government provides resources we need to serve the community. Aside from a few metro counties and cities, the direct support we work for our work, we depend on private foundations and contributions to help cover most communities, including in greater Minnesota. Still, a gap remains. The House decision to include $500,000 in one-time funding, if we were awarded the funds, would help fill this gap. Thank you again, and for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Gobazi. Please introduce yourself, provide your testimony, and up next will be Emily Stewart and then Melissa Taphorn.
Thank you. My name's Drew Gobazi, and I'm with Habitat for Humanity of Minnesota. Thank you, Chair Port, Chair Igo, and members of the Conference Committee for the opportunity to share feedback on provisions in the housing bill. Habitat for Humanity of Minnesota also wants to share just our deep gratitude for all the chairs and their committees for the work done this session. on these bills and on your work to reduce barriers to building more homes. As leadership and committee work together to address funding needs across the continuum, we urge the committee to include provisions that would invest in our proven pipelines and advance housing policy, along with investments in housing infrastructure bonds and challenge program. Habitat Minnesota is grateful for the following House provisions. The $3 million in workforce and affordable homeownership development program. Minnesota continues to face a substantial housing shortfall as housing production struggles to keep up with demand. And this is really a proven pipeline that meets local housing needs that are not adequately addressed by other initiatives. And then the $20 million in the Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Program. Housing is, it of course, as you know, an ongoing need, and every project requires public infrastructure, which is costly and often a barrier to building housing in rural communities. And then we urge the committee to also include critical provisions from the Senate, the $2 million in first-generation down payment assistance for home buyers whose parents have never owned a home or lost their home due to foreclosure. This community-based program has really helped home buyers achieve homeownership, and we're grateful for that this critical program has been recommended in the base. And then finally, we support establishing a task force on homeowners and commercial property insurance. The increasing cost of insurance has become an alarming burden, with Minnesota homeowners paying 38% more for homeowner insurance than the national average. Thank you for the opportunity to provide this feedback. Habitat Minnesota looks forward to continuing to partner on these resources and ensure everyone is able to have their own home. Thanks.
Thank you. Emily Stewart, and after that, Melissa Taphorn, and then Jason Urbanchik. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and present your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Port, Chair Igo, Chair Howard, and members of the conference committee. My name is Emily Stewart, and I'm the Associate Director at North Country Cooperative Foundation. I'm here to share the real impact of housing investments and the urgent need to build on them. Just last month, I should first say, I represent manufactured housing when I'm up here. So when I talk about housing, I want to talk specifically about that asset class. So just last month, we closed on the Rash Ranch Cooperative, a manufactured home community in Zumbrota, Minnesota, which is now a resident-owned and permanently affordable community. The success was made possible by your $10 million direct appropriation last session and the new unsolicited notice of sale law. Our organization has a lending arm, CLF, and we are able to act as a first position lender, something that we've never done before, deploying $2.3 million and an additional $300,000 of deferred repayment, cutting rent increases nearly in half. To date, we have committed over $4 million to permanently preserve 254 home sites across four Minnesota communities, and we have more communities ready to go. But we're facing two big challenges. First, Minnesota Housing has been a key financing partner, offering first mortgage loans we paired with our subsidized debt. Changes at the agency means we've lost their partnership, forcing our organization to shoulder more of the financial burden. As a result, we are expecting to deploy all of our 2023 direct appropriation by the end of the year. So we're asking for additional capital to ensure resident ownership continues to be an achievable goal in Minnesota. Second, these communities are facing aging infrastructure, failing sewer, unsafe roads, inadequate drainage. That's where the Manufactured Home Community Redevelopment Program is critical. MHCR has funded over 30 major infrastructure projects, including 11 resident-owned communities, preserving more than 800 homes. But demand outpaces available funds. Only 21% of the 2024 requests were awarded. We want to ensure HIBs will be used for MHCR program to ensure more communities can access safe, modern infrastructure without passing that cost along to the residents. Lastly, I urge your support for the down payment assistance for manufactured homes who are often excluded from the traditional mortgage market. Paired with the NeighborWorks Home Partners new mortgage program, first of its kind in the country, thanks to your support, this could open the door to homeownership for 150 families. Respectfully, we are the most cost-effective option when it comes to preserving affordable housing in the state. We know that funding is tight, but we do more with less, and this funding benefits not just residents, but also the larger community through attainable workforce housing and more money spent in community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Ms. Taphorn, then Jason Urbanchik, and after that, Will Delaney. Please introduce yourself for the committee and present your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Port and members of the conference committee. My name is Melissa Taphorn. I'm the executive director of the Washington County Community Development Agency and the legislative chair for Minnesota NARO, or National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials. And NARO represents 150 housing and redevelopment authorities, or HRAs, across the state of Minnesota. On behalf of our membership, I request inclusion of three policy items that are included in the House bill but not in the Senate bill. First, on page R13 of the side-by-side, we support a technical amendment to the state rental assistance program, which clarifies that program administrators will annually recertify participant income and the resulting rental assistance. We believe this edit was the intention of the original bill and follows the practice of federal rental assistance procedures. Second, on page R26, we support the simple amendment to explicitly include HRAs in the definition of local government eligible to create a local housing trust fund. This amendment streamlines the operations and the reporting of a local housing trust fund, as many cities and counties rely on their HRAs to conduct the activities of a trust fund, and HRA levies are the primary resource to fund those trust funds. This amendment is most impactful to those standalone and multi-county HRAs. And then third, on page R28, Minnesota NARO strongly supports the ability to create a public corporation that would be eligible for public housing rehabilitation dollars funded by state general obligation bonds. As HUD has urged housing authorities to transition their public housing to Section 8 platforms, we have been in conversation with MMB and Minnesota Housing for many years now to identify and understand how those transition paths do and do not align with bonding regulations and program requirements. This language that's included is responsive to those conversations and narrows the scope of eligibility to public housing being disposed to a public corporation fully owned, operated, and funded by the original housing authority. And then finally, we just want to lend our support to wherever you land on a budget target, both bodies have increased the base funding, and we fully support that. Last week, the president released a budget that eliminates a number of housing programs and cuts the rest, including our Section 8 rental assistance programs, by 43%. And that is pushing the responsibility to states and local government. And last, I want to thank you all and all the committee members in both bodies for your leadership in providing concrete solutions to the housing issues faced across the entire state. Thank you again.
Thank you, Ms. Taphorn. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Urbanchik. After Mr. Urbanchik will be Will Delaney and Rayanna Lee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Igo, Chair Port, Chair Howard, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Jason Urbanchik. I currently reside in Moorhead. I'm honored to be here representing the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless and Homes for All Coalition. Come to this podium with a deep commitment to the belief that every Minnesotan deserves stable, safe, and affordable housing. A belief that is rooted in both our crucial work and my personal journey. I know firsthand the transformative power of stability. Today, I mark 6 years, 6 months, and 7 days of sobriety, a milestone that was possible only because I had a stable home. Housing isn't merely a roof over one's head. It is the bedrock upon which individuals can reclaim their dignity, rebuild their lives, and engage fully as active, contributing citizens. Excuse me. Stability has allowed me to grow and thrive in all aspects of my life, which in turn has made it possible for me to serve others by sharing my story and advocating for communities across our great state. Every day, families and seniors, homebuyers across Minnesota, confront the harsh realities of unaffordable housing. The struggle to balance rent with essential needs like food, health care, or education is a story too familiar in our communities. These challenges extend far beyond statistics. They echo in the lives of our neighbors, friends, and fellow Minnesotans. When a family can barely meet the basic necessities of life, our entire community suffers. The initiatives supported in this bill reflect an understanding that robust investments in housing stability are investments in the future of Minnesota. Every effort to prevent homelessness, every measure to safeguard affordable housing, and every initiative to provide essential support services is a testament to awarding, every individual the chance to succeed.
When we support stable housing, we uplift entire communities, reducing the stress on our healthcare, education, and public service systems, and paving the way for increased prosperity and stronger neighborhoods. I stand here today not only as an advocate, but as living proof that stable housing saves lives. My own recovery and progress are evidence of what is possible when a person has a stable home. The foundation has enabled me to give back to my community and work every day to ensure that others can experience the same stability and life they deserve. The programs supported in the House and Senate bills reflect an understanding that robust investments in housing are needed. We also understand that the Senate received a limited target, so of course we would like to see the House's more robust funding advance because where we live impacts everything. Thank you for your time, your consideration, and your efforts to build Minnesota that stands the beacon of hope for opportunity for all. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony and congratulations on 6.5 years. It's incredible.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Delaney, after that, Rihanna Lee, after that, Paul Veretti. Please introduce yourself and present your testimony.
Hi, thank you, Chair Port, Chair Igo, Chair Howard, and committee members. My name is Will Delaney. I am the co-executive director of Hope Community Incorporated, a nonprofit community development organization located in the Phillips community of Minneapolis. And I'm here today representing Hope through the Housing Stability Coalition, of which Hope is a member. That is a coalition of fellow nonprofit, mission-based, affordable housing owner-operator developers, of which whom many of you know. We've been speaking to you throughout session. And I'm here today to speak specifically to the regulatory relief provisions in the preservation plan or framework provisions in the bill before you. And I come here with kind of the unfortunate reality that it's not necessarily what we would like to be promoting, but it's what where we are, where we need to be, because as you know, and you've heard others speak about, the rising costs, everything from insurance to operating costs have threatened the sustainability of regulated affordable housing in our state. We've seen drips and drabs of loss of affordable housing, including at Hope, where we lost a 25-unit building within the last couple of years. There's more that is threatened to be lost. And unfortunately, while the biggest thing we need is actually more money, more subsidy, more funds, we know that in the current environment, that's actually only likely to get worse, where we're likely to have less. So we feel as a coalition that the next best thing and the most important thing to do is to build off of the really important work of the Affordable Housing Task Force that you all commissioned last year that completed its work early this year. And within that, we feel like we need to move to something that's more of a plan for how to deal in the best way with the unfortunate reality that when properties are threatened with their viability and their sustainability, it would be better to make some changes, make some relief possible so that they can continue to operate with some affordability rather than losing it completely either to market rate forces, to out-of-state venture capital type investors who are the types of folks who can frankly step in when the subsidized affordable housing providers can't operate a building. That could lead to just long-term loss and really reduce the great work we've done in the state to build up our affordable housing stock. And again, while we don't want to be in this position, we think that it's better to figure out a plan as a state rather than just do it in drips and drabs. And so within that provision, we think the best thing to do that is in this bill is to really try and figure out how we best balance the needs to preserve some affordability, trying to protect our existing tenants as much as possible, while also trying to protect for future residents so that there is some affordable housing into the future. Hopefully there will be future funding coming at some point in time to kind of revive this, and we want to minimize the losses as much as possible in the meantime. Thank you for all your work this session and appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Ms. Lee, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record, present your testimony. After that will be Mr. Veretti and then Roxanne Young-Kimball.
Thank you so much, chairs and members of the conference committee. For the record, my name is Rihanna Lee. I'm the legislative and coalitions director for the Americans for Prosperity chapter here in Minnesota. And to be respectful of time, I did also submit a letter with some longer comments. I will just note that we support the direction of these housing bills, but they do not go far enough. And to put this into perspective for people who might not be policy wonks deep into this issue, think of Minnesota's housing market like you need to bake a cake, except you need to bake a cake that meets every single dietary need, okay? You need to bake one that is gluten-free, sugar-free, keto, vegan, you name it. And the end result, you get a recipe that becomes so complicated and expensive, and the end result does not meet anybody's expectations. That is what is happening under our state's outdated and restrictive web of housing regulations. They inflate costs, they limit supply, and they block the market from responding to real needs in real time. The failed status quo is prevailing, and we are stuck, unfortunately, in these half measures. And we have known for years that it costs tens of thousands of dollars more to build a home here than in other states. That is not fair to Minnesotans, especially when the average age of first-time homeownership is now 38. And members, that is technically old enough to become a grandparent. That should be unacceptable to every single person here. We urge you to include the Minnesota Starter Home Act. We urge you to repeal harmful mandates like parking minimums, aesthetic mandates, rent control, and support more housing where it makes sense. I want to acknowledge your hard work, and thank you for being advocates and leading the charge on this. I know it is not easy, and I think you can figure out where my criticism is directed, and that is at the people that are blocking the progress that we need to make. There is no amount of money that we can pour into this issue. Even if it was there, it would not solve the crisis that we are in. And as we have heard, governments love power. And as we've seen that, as these bills have been so horribly watered down, we talk to your constituents every single day. And we are on the ground, and Minnesotans are not asking for more process and red tape. They are asking for an affordable place to call home. So let's allow the market to do what it does best. And after all, as we know, there's no place like home. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Mr. Verretti, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Chair Support, IGO, Conference Committee members. I'm Paul Verrett, the Public Policy Director of Agate Housing and Services. Thanks so much for the opportunity to express my thanks and support for your work. While many difficult choices had to be made this year, I appreciate the work of this committee to continue Minnesota's efforts to end homelessness and provide the safety and opportunity of a good home to all. I'm going to focus my remarks on the Family Homelessness Prevention and Assistance Program, FHPAP. I urge you to choose the higher level proposed in the House version. It is a good investment that meets the needs of the people we serve very effectively. FHPAP is the foundation of Agate's rapid rehousing and prevention efforts. We are the largest rapid rehousing program in Hennepin County. We receive a mix of FHPAP and HUD funds through Hennepin County. We use this support to provide time-limited services that help us to work with residents to pay back rent, connect heads of household to employment, and also to a variety of other services to help families quickly get back on their feet. Right now, our team has 7 case managers that can serve up to 18 households at a time, so we can serve about 126 families at a time. We also employ an intake coordinator and a housing locator. Our housing locator works with property owners to help families, to help keep families housed, ensure that they receive tenant education, and work to move to paying their rent independently. We receive right now about 30 emails every day looking for prevention funds and are only able to serve about 6 to 8 families a month. With the prevention fund budget we have, we run out of money sometimes within days. We can only serve about 6 to 8. And many of them have 2 to 3 months back rent. FHP is a strong life-changing investment in Minnesota families that also saves the state money. The combination of prevention funds and rapid rehousing help to keep families in their homes, and this approach is less expensive than moving into shelter, avoids the instability of moving to shelter by keeping families in their own communities, and also supports property owners by avoiding evictions and providing tenant education. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Verrett. Roxanne Young Kimball, please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Port, Chair Igo, and Chair Howard, and conference committee members. My name is Roxanne Young Kimball. I'm the president and CEO of the Minnesota Homeownership Center. We're a nonprofit intermediary that convenes stakeholders on policy and programs for affordable homeownership in Minnesota. I appreciate that this is a very difficult budget year. Homeownership is a critical affordable housing strategy that builds resilience and prosperity for Minnesotans. There are two key priorities that I'd like to highlight. We support the Senate position to support the First Generation Community Down Payment Assistance Program, including critical ongoing investment in the base budget. First Gen was developed in a statewide coalition of industry stakeholders. It's delivered by trusted community-based organizations throughout Minnesota, and it's proven success to bring meaningful statewide support to households with the most barriers to accessing homeownership. In 2023, the program was funded with $100 million for the pilot and expected to serve 2,900 homebuyers. As of April 30th, we have served almost 1,000 homeowners in their purchase, and we have another 1,200 homeowners in our pipeline. That means that there's just 23% of loans that remain available. Over 90% of the households served by the First Gen Community Down Payment Assistance Program have been households of color. It is meaningfully changing the racial disparity in homeownership in our state. It opens an opportunity to cost-burdened renters who don't have the benefit of a contribution to down payment assistance from a family member. I want to thank both the House and Senate for their support of the Home Buyer Education, Counseling, and Training Program. HECAT supports a network of 31 nonprofit organizations throughout Minnesota, roughly half in Greater Minnesota and half in the Twin Cities Metro. These homeownership counselors provide one-on-one counseling for credit solutions, budget solutions, and foreclosure prevention, as well as group education about homeownership. Since 2008, our network has prevented 40,000 foreclosures in Minnesota, representing $3.2 billion of preserved community wealth. I fear that without an increase to the base budget of $857,000, there will be a service reduction, and the critical support that's provided by our counseling network will not be there when a household needs it. As the housing affordability crisis increases, so does the wait for the housing counselors that deliver these services. We're seeing larger down payment assistance needed and layering of multiple programs. We fear that there's going to be an increase in foreclosures as the economy is uncertain. And we have demands from the Homeownership Association Working Group and demands for increased post-purchase support that are straining the network that we support. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much. Members, that is the end of our testimony today. Just to sort of, I guess, preview out for you, we don't have another committee meeting scheduled at this point. I think you've heard today there's a lot of shared both policy and finance pieces in these bills. Really the only big difference is the target. So we need our global target in order to sort of take the next step. We will keep folks posted if you'll watch on the committee website. We will try to give 24 hours before posting before the next committee hearing to let folks know. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe there may be a couple of us on the House side that are on multiple conference committees. If you might, before you post, check to see what schedules look like. That would be greatly appreciated because we haven't figured out cloning just yet.
Absolutely, Representative Nash. I am also on another one. So we will do our very best to work with folks' schedules, including staff who are covering multiple committees as well. But we will try to be as upfront and public as we can when we know when the next committee meeting will be scheduled. And with that, we are at the end of our agenda, and this meeting is adjourned.